Hello, friends. Come on in. Now, I know you're eager to get back into the story and see how Mad Maeve is doing. However, I do have a few announcements I have to make. For those of you just joining us, we do have some extra content for you if you can't seem to get enough of the writer's room. If you join our Ko-fi page, starting at the Scallywag tier, for a mere $5 a month, you can be privy to The Crow's Nest, which is a new little mini-show that Evan has been hosting. It's the in-between talk between episodes, where we sit down and we analyze the choices that were made and the plot that has thickened, or thinned, depending on how the episode went. So if that interests you, head on over to our Ko-fi page, and maybe consider pledging. So every other week, on the off schedule of the article, or Notes with the Narrator. And speaking of Notes with the Narrator, it will be coming back at the beginning of the year with a 3-part episode. That's right, you heard it here first. 3 parts with Sam. Remember Sam? He and I are going to sit down and we are going to address the elephant in the room. That elephant being villains. So, stay tuned in January for a wonderful 3-part Notes of the Narrator, really getting into the darker side of 7C. And speaking of darker sides, there is a little bit of a content warning on this episode. Mad Maeve has several overlaid voices, and one of those voices might be a little unsettling. So just be aware that the volume may not be the best at max on this one. I think that's most of the announcements that I have so far. There are more things on my docket, but they're not quite set in stone yet, so I'll save them for when I have more information. That's right. I gotta give you something to look forward to. I'd also like to take this moment to thank our Ko-fi officers who have helped us throughout this entire year. Raven, V, Nightingale, Covington, Stewart, Tarkin, Cheshire, Thrith, Durs, Mellowet, Spin, Merlin, and Armani. You're a treasure to us all. And we love you so very much. As we love all of our friends. Platonically, of course. Anyhoozles, shall we get back to the story? I know we left off on a big writer's room segment, so let me give you a very quick recap. Going into this, Jesse has 7 raises, Roland has 6, and Angelica has 5. And I have 2 danger points. So let's see what happens with Mad Maeve. Article 3. The Cheshire's Grin, Part 2. The camera unfocuses from black, and we are skittering around rafters. And when the camera finally settles, we are looking down at a room. In that room are 4 people, one of which is tied to a chair. And we watch as one of them stoops down to untie the leg of the person in the chair. And the moment that the ties come unbound, they kick out a leg and snap some kind of copper circle in the ground.
Jesse, do you rebind her leg after that?
If she's not going to stop fucking around with it, then yes.
Yeah.
I am very sorry, my dear. This is for your own good.
You're no fun.
That is not true. I can be very fun when I'm in a good mood.
I take it today doesn't have you in a good mood.
Well, we'll find out, I suppose, huh?
I suppose we will.
I need to know where he is.
And I need you
to be more specific.
Can you tell me where to find the devil?
How many raises are you spending?
I'm going to spend 6, and 1 will be towards the Audra bit.
Okay. You want to know where the devil is. Am I correct?
No. Where can I find the devil, Jonah?
Oh, you see, the funny thing about that is that you've already been there, haven't you? Now, as far as pointing it out on a map, I can't do that for you, because where he is where he
isn't.
If you understand my meaning. It's a place where the sun and the moon are in the same sky as the stars. And the oceans are silver.
I heard what you fucking said, Zoe.
All right, just making sure.
I'm fucking buckled up. You can go full speed.
There has to be more you can give me, Audra.
What more is there?
I don't know, but I need as clear of an answer as I can get. And right now, we are best friends in this situation.
Best friend? Samwell called me that once.
No, Samwell didn't call you that, Maeve. He called Audra his best friend.
You start to see the brightness of the green start to clear up a little bit.
I suppose you're right.
I've never been anyone's best friend.
At this point, you feel a hand on your shoulder. It's not rough, it's not angry, it's actually very gentle.
Please remove your hand.
Roland does.
Thank you.
I appreciate what you're trying to do, lad. May I?
Yeah, go for it. And he takes a step back.
You again.
I don't believe that we have met.
I don't have your name, no. But if you want to give it to me, I'd be more than happy to hold it.
You're going to have to wake me up far earlier in the morning to do that, lass. See, I have a little girl of my own. Until recently, I assumed she was all but lost to me, and yet something tells me that she's still out there somewhere. And she, well, she tried to pull a few of those tricks on her old da once or twice when she was a wee bairn.
Are you spending rays?
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't you, Audra?
She kind of like tilts her head a little bit, stares a little bit more intently at Roland, and then quirks her head the other way.
Interesting. That's not what I hear.
Hmm.
That's not what she tells me. But I suppose you wouldn't know that either, since you, just like Samwell, abandoned her.
I know that you're trying to protect her. And I just wanted to tell you.
And I'm gonna spend another raise trying to appeal to that protective nature and the core of Maeve's reason for existence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping my little girl alive.
Something odd happens, and it's not the green part of the eye that shimmers, it's the black bit. There is now an iris in there that is pure white. And her head kind of tilts so that you can only see that part of it.
Tick-tock goes the clock and all the years they fly. Tick-tock and all too soon she was going to die.
Roland just nods in understanding.
I want to help you, but I can't do that alone. And right now, my...
And just looks back.
Companions and myself are doing our best to try and find another piece of that puzzle, trying to find the person who might be able to enlighten us as to how to make that in any way better. You might not know my name, but if you poke around in there, you've seen my face, and you know that I would never let anything bad happen to Audra of my accord. Not so long as I'm here, Not so long as I'm by her side. And I'll make sure that that holds true for these folks. Do you perhaps suppose we might be able to have a word with her?
Dost thou wish to hear the funeral bell toll? It is I, Maeve, who keeps Audra home.
I know.
There are slights I have forgiven, and suffering I can stand. But you are not the one that forced my wicked hand.
Understood.
Releasing her is folly, as you are well to know. By oak and ash and holly, I deign to let her go.
I graciously thank you.
Shattered like a mirror is her soul to see. You may have her clearer. Ask her questions three.
Looks back to you two. You heard her.
I think Angelica nods, looks to Jesse.
Keep her talking. I'll be right back.
Sure.
And she's actually going to leave and go downstairs.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay, okay.
Ooh, spicy.
Oh, very spicy.
Ooh, we love it. Ooh, Vogue, let's go.
Secrets, plots. Natalie, thriving, being a fucking badass.
Natalie, the moment.
Natalie, a role-playing experience.
Sign me up, bro. Damn. Fucking toss that stew in the crock pot for 8 hours.
Bro, same though.
God, I wish someone would stew me. It's fucking cold out.
We live in New England, everyone. It is negative 20 out right now. It's bad.
I had a nice iced latte from Dunk's today.
I also had an iced coffee because I must establish dominion over winter. That white iris vanishes. That black tendril that is leaking from the missing eye reverts into the socket, and she shuts her lid. The other eye is now that brilliant, vibrant, gorgeous Highland Marches Avalon green.
Where?
Hi.
Huh? Duh.
Audra.
Duh.
Oh, my sweet little bairn.
Duh. What's going on? Where? Where am I?
It's all right.
Where?
Tries to like lift her arms, but then looks and sees that she's bound.
Why am I?
It's okay.
Please.
You remember what's happened.
How could I forget? How could I forget? Maeve tries to protect me,
and I want to so
bad. But I can't forget.
I would like to activate my virtue, Nullborn, which allows me to prevent any magical effects, sorceries, artifacts, monsters, etc. from affecting me. And just by our closeness and the connection that we share, if I can impart that sort of void of sorcery to her mind for a moment, to give her just a second of clarity.
Rule of cool. Normally I'd be like, nah, that only really affects you, but rule of cool, this is...
blood relation through blood.
Yeah, that absolutely works.
Roland is going to press their foreheads together again.
Duh, you have to let me go. He's going to find me.
Sweetie.
He's going to get me again.
Look at me.
Duh.
Daddy's here.
Duh.
And Audra starts crying. And at first, you can hear it in all three of the voices, but as she lets go, it's just her.
Right here, my sweet. You've been so strong. And I'm so proud of you.
Dad, it hurts to cry. Please don't make me cry anymore.
Why? We have some questions for you.
I'll do my best to answer them.
That's all anyone can ask of you.
Reaches behind and just grabs one of her hands with his other hand on her shoulder, turns back to Jesse and just nods his head.
Hello, Audra.
Hello, Jesse.
I'm sorry we had to meet under these circumstances, but I need to find Wayland, Samwell.
I tried to tell you.
Audra.
I really did. But I could only do so much. I only wish I could have done more.
You gave me everything I needed. I was blinded by desperation, but you were close to someone who is of great importance right now, and that's enough for me.
You and Maeve have that in common.
Maeve is kind of a bitch, but that's not your fault.
It is in her nature to be.
You and I have a very complicated relationship with the devil.
The deal that Maeve made with him was to try and free my soul. But of course, my soul was the cost. So, here we are. What do you plan to do, if you don't mind my asking?
We share the same rot of his, and I plan to free us of its grasp. I'm going to use a hero point for Savior, and he's going to try and locate a seed on her.
Audra does not have a typical seed. That seed is despair. Not desperation. Despair. From the two seeds that you've seen so far, it does not look anything like it, because it is bound up and kind of being attacked by the she side of Audra. So you can see the seed, and every time it tries to grow, this spectral black oil slick colored ichor just like rips it out.
She's effectively got a sorceress autoimmune disease, because every time it rips the seed out, it's also hurting her, but it needs to do that to protect her.
Is there a way, like what I did for Charles? Can I take it, reshape it, and give back the she roots, but like coerce it out?
I think you can. And the reason that you can is because of what you did with Agnes.
Oh shit, that's right!
Because you've already done it.
The Fae side would feel that Jesse has already done something like this and is considered a she friend.
Yes.
Fuck.
Absolutely.
Holy shit, that's so dope!
So fucking now, here's, cool.
Here's the rub. You're dealing with Audra in this moment. So you're only going to be able to interact with what Audra allows you to interact with. In this case, it's going to be representative in a vision. So you're going to be able to help Audra in this moment.
If Jesse knows he can do that, he's going to do it.
Jesse would know this, because Jesse dealt with Agnes while Agnes was being unraveled. What's happening to Audra, Mad Maeve, is similar. And because of the human she nature, you, of all people in this instance, will have the understanding that you need in order to help her.
This is a lot to ask after an introduction, but can you trust me for a moment?
Don't forget that we met on the Black Freighter that day, even though very briefly. And I trusted you then, as I do now. Do what you must. I shall grin and bear it.
Are you sure?
I must. Da.
Okay.
Roland, grab her hand, please.
Roland's just really quick going to take out a short strip of leather and offer it to her to bite down on.
Yeah, she does that.
And grabs her other hand.
She grips both of your hands tightly.
Audra, I'm gonna need you to breathe, okay?
She just nods her head.
This might be uncomfortable, but just bear with me.
I'm gonna let you take the camera and you describe to us what happens.
Jesse shuts his eyes and pushes to connect his subconscious with hers. After a moment, it feels as though he's pushing through threads that grow thicker into vines. And the camera focuses upon a widely lush grove. Its vines and brush and leaves and bark and root and soil and life, but near silence. Jesse finds this part of himself in Bryn Bresale.
Overhead, the canopy is dappled with a thinning light of dusk. Bright luminescence of fungus and overgrown flora. And in the center of the grove is a spindly, slowly dying tree, not more than a few feet wide at its base. Nestled in the heart of the trunk is the seed of corruption, which is drenched in blood and blackened ichor. The only sound he can hear is the heartbeat of the Song de Fou. His hand extends and wraps around the seed, and the vines entangle around his arm up to the elbow. He tries to pull away, but it doesn't break free immediately. And within the moment of panic, the weight and energy and shape of the seed seems to melt, and he feels a presence from behind him that he assumes is Wayland's. He looks over his shoulder and instead sees two blurry humanoid figures off in the distance. The vines break as he pulls away, while the cavity, the bark, and gnarled roots around it are scarred. The blood and ichor dry and flake away to dust. And the tree almost appears to exhale a sigh of relief. Still spindly, but it appears immediately full of life and new growth again. When he opens his hand, the dust of what was the seed blows away in a light breeze.
As the remnants of that seed float into the air and vanish into obscurity, your eyes refocus on something that you had missed the first time you walked in here. But without distraction, you can see it now. A decrepit, decaying, gnarled, black tree. So twisted that there is no grain pattern to this. And all over it are these overgrown, choking, kudzu-like red vines. And when you go to touch them, your hand comes away soaking wet with blood. You know there's a seed in this tree. And you know this tree is connected to Audra, because those vines go in through the roots and are choking hers. But you can't do anything about it from this end.
Jesse shuts his eyes again, returning his focus to his hand on Audra's chest in the bucket. He opens his eyes, and we're back. I think if Roland looks to Jesse in that moment, Jesse's eyes are open and moving, and for a second they stop, and his pupils pull into two slits, very wild and fey-like.
Ooh. All right. Okay.
And when he comes out of the vision, they are normal again.
Oh, that's so cool.
So yeah. Fucking love that. That's lovely. That's absolutely lovely.
As soon as Jesse touched over Audra's heart, she stiffened and like took in a sharp inhale and started to convulse. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse to the point where she was shaking the chair. And then all of a sudden she lets out a deep breath and like drops her head entirely.
Roland had wrapped one large arm around her upper torso and like held her head in place so as she didn't hurt herself in all of that shaking.
You check her pulse. She's still breathing. She comes out of it a little bit after Jesse comes back.
You okay, lass?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Just gives her a kiss on the top of the head.
Are you still with us?
Yes. Yes, I'm still here. Whatever you did, I feel lighter. As if a great burden has been removed from me.
Well, I suppose that could have gone worse. I'm going to spend another hero point for Savior. A friend of mine told me you've been in and out of the bucket recently. What have you been up to?
Well, after you
ruined Maeve's elaborate plan to cheat Rhys and the devil. She was severely punished and sent on sentry duty. We were posted here on Oragosa to watch for a specific someone who would only ever enter the bucket of blood. And everything was fine until Roland showed up.
I believe that individual might have been Angelica.
Why was she coming for Angelica? What does she want with her?
According to one of Wayland's letters, you folk took on a particular individual not too long ago, eh? Within a certain ship. One who cursed Jonah to begin with.
Yeah, sure did.
I imagine if Jonah wants it undone, it's probably going to require one.
What the fuck?
Which begs the question, why Miss De La Sombra is charging right for him? But that's a question for her, not you, my dear.
When you spend raises, tell me, because you only get three of those.
I still have two hero points. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard much from the Crimson Fleet. Is she trying to let Jonah go?
Let him go? No. No, she's trying to tighten the leash. We were about to tell him something in the exchange, but you ruined that. It's not your fault. In fact, it's better that you did, but...
What? What do you mean?
Rhys is tethered to Jonah. The curse? He can break it.
What?
He can break the curse, but he's missing a few crucial details. Those details she has either destroyed or kept under lock and key. If he learns that he can break his own curse...
The more power she has.
No. Dar, holding dominion over the devil does not give Rhys power. It gives her control. She knows where he is at all times. What he's doing, what he's done, where he's been. And vice versa, of course, since the curse is twofold. But if he breaks it, then he'll be as loose as a mad dog.
And, the Black Freighter. Your other half said it was in... The Seventh Sea. Is there a good way to get to it?
If you're cool with it, I'll spend a raise asking that question.
Yeah, totally. The camera sees Jesse's neck and the hairs stand up tall. He did not want to ask that question.
Yeah.
Those who have lost everything that they were and everything they will be will eventually end up in the Seventh Sea.
I see. My darling, what can we do for you?
Is that another question?
No, this is more just a... not really expecting a particular answer to this.
Da, please don't waste questions like that. I only have three. Please, it's not about me anymore, right?
Okay, all right.
The Sang de Fu. Where's Maeve taking it?
She's not taking it anywhere. She's waiting with it.
Where is it?
It is both in and out of your realm, and Bryn Brisail, and somewhere else. Every time I try to get a good look, it hurts to look at it, really. It's
all right.
Okay. Your connection to Stroud. How can I break that connection to him without killing you or Maeve?
Is that a raise that you're spending? Or a hero point?
That's a raise.
Yeah, we're at two.
Did Wayland ever show you the note that I wrote them? The Red Ghost has her soul.
Yeah.
It's a double meaning. First and foremost, Rhys. But I'm sure you figured that out by now.
Yeah.
Secondly, it means me. The Red Ghost has my soul. Anyone that signs the Red Ghost's charter relinquishes their soul to Stroud. Not to the ship, mind you. He takes the souls and keeps them. When he would be killed, the souls that he keeps, he expels. And so in order to kill him, you would have to either free the souls or damn them.
Do you know of a way to release them, then?
I'm
sure there's a way. There must be a way, but I've never gotten close enough to find it. I'm sorry.
We'll look into it.
All right. The only thing I ever found out for certain is that he is like I am. A half-breed. Half-she, half-human. Except he has all but abandoned his human side.
All right. We're going to do our best to find a way. Okay?
I know, Da. Thank you.
I want to help you. And I'm going to.
I know you will. You always seem to find a way. But you needn't worry too much. I have survived this long on my own.
Is there anything you want me to tell Wayland or Samwell?
Wow!
You gotta give me a minute. Audra looks up at you, and there are tears cascading down her eye and the bad eye.
Please tell Samwell that I'm the one who broke our promise. And if you could give this to Wayland for me, I'm not sure if I'm able to anymore. Or if I even can. It's in my pocket.
He reaches into the pocket.
It is the button off of the ATC coat that Wayland gave to her.
Oh. I will make sure that it's done. All of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know if I'll ever be able to repay you.
Be strong. Head up. Breathe deep. Audra, I promise that we're gonna help.
Captain Nakansa, I don't think there's any help for me left. I'd rather you promise me that you're going to find Wayland. Please.
I promise we'll help you.
And we will find a way.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
There's no need to apologize.
Kisses her forehead.
The girl said not to make her cry, Roland. Angelica walks in carrying a bowl of water and bandages, a little sewing kit, and medicine to treat the wounds.
Stop, I'm gonna cry.
Oh.
She sets them down on a little table. If you two are done, give me a minute with her.
Roland very trepidatiously looks at the bandages and back up to you, Angelica.
Let's get you cleaned up. We shouldn't do it in front of these two rough boys.
I'm her father, excuse me.
There's such a thing as modesty, Mr. McAbran.
Aye, and her modesty went out the window when I was changing her as a child.
Roland, come on. Let's give them a moment.
Are you okay if I go? If you want me to stay, I will stay. You say the word.
No, duh. I do, but I don't, and it's best if you leave. Please.
I'll be right outside.
Kisses her one more time on the top of the head and gives her one big embrace. One last squeeze of the shoulder as she, like, tears himself away from her. It's very hard.
It's difficult for her, too. She has not blinked and not looked away from you as you get up to leave. In her eyes is just this pleading sadness. She knows you have to go, and she also knows that this might be the last time that she sees you as she is.
Daddy loves you so much.
It's
okay.
He turns and leaves.
Roland's right behind him.
Angelica turns around and quietly bolts the door.
Fuck yeah.
Remember when Angelica was doing her approach, empathy was not part of that.
I'm aware.
No, it wasn't.
She comes back over to the table and she takes the pair of scissors from the sewing kit and she starts to clean up Audra's hair so that it's less messy looking.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, whatever would look the best.
You give her a pixie bob cut.
And she gets that out of her eyes, cleans up the long, straggly rat tail edges of it. She takes the ointment, puts it on the wounds. She'll even say as she threads a needle for a stitch or two, "This might sting a little, but we don't want those getting infected." And she will close up what she can.
Audra doesn't really respond to you other than make a small hiccuping noise to try and calm herself from crying. Nor does she really react to you stitching her up. It's as though she really doesn't feel pain right now. At least, not in the manner that you're causing.
As she's finishing up the last of the stitches and bandaging what she can bandage, she says, "Between you and me, those two like to talk a lot. They like to make their words sound scary." She snips the thread, sets her tools down, and she wipes away some of the dried blood with a warm, wet cloth. "I'm sorry to ask this, Audra, but I need to talk to Maeve."
"Are you quite sure you want that?"
"I've done what I can for you. Now she has to do something for me."
"You know that you're the one she wants."
"I was outside the door. I heard it all." Because she went downstairs quickly, gathered these supplies, and then came right back up in a hurry to wait and listen outside the door. I'm activating her time sense to say that she perfectly timed her return to this room.
I love it.
Big fan of that.
I think Angelica rests a hand on Audra's knee. "It'll be all right, Audra. I've got a plan."
"You'll need one when dealing with her. She's unhinged now."
Angelica squeezes a little bit in a less than comforting sort of way. And she looks up through her own wavy curls and she says, "I can be too."
Yeah, buddy.
You guys ready for a cat fight?
Yeah!
Let's go!
Angelica steps away and out of the salt circle, just out of what she observed as Maeve's full get-in-your-face reach.
Audra's head drops. There are shudderings, small spasms of her body, and all of a sudden, she launches herself as far as she can, as far as the bindings can go, stretching all the way. And when her body lunges, she snaps her head up, and that blackness has returned. It's taken over all of her face, and that green has just gone. It's just white now. You see this unseelie being, you see this creature that lives inside of Audra, the she. She laughs. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? But I'm back. I hope you didn't miss me too much.
Like I said, those boys like to make threats. I make promises. And she says that very purposefully.
The last person to make me a promise broke it. So what makes you think I'm going to accept yours,
I have seen things more powerful than you could ever hope to be. And I've seen those things die. Given long enough, I could figure out what would hurt you the most. So why don't you cooperate? And I won't break the only parts left of you that aren't already ruined.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. Hell no.
You want Samuel Flint.
I want his heart.
I can do you one better.
Can you now?
You have the Song de Fu.
I do.
You are its captain.
I am.
I need a ship. The boys figured out where our friend Jonah and his freighter are, but we need to get there. You take us to the freighter, you get us into the Seventh Sea with all the hopelessness of that girl, and when we find Samuel, I'll hand you his thread myself.
I don't doubt it, Striga. Are you sure you want to offer me something that even fate would deny?
I can be resourceful, and I can't say I've ever been a fan of fate's work. Do we have a deal?
If all you want is safe passage to the freighter, then we have a deal.
And she holds out her hand.
She looks down at your hand and looks up at you.
Right, how rude of me. And she will take one of her knives and cut Maeve free.
The moment she is freed, there is a subsonic wave that erupts in the room. It obliterates the salt circle and erases the chalk drawings that bind her. The chair turns into splinters up against the wall. And when you open your eyes again to shield yourself from the sudden flare of power, you see Mad Maeve in all of her wicked glory. Now, Audra is still standing in front of you, but behind her is this being made of the umbral shadows that hide in crevices. The darkness that you can never see through, no matter how long you let your eyes adjust. And that blur, that edge of your vision right before your peripheral ends, and there's just nothing. That is what this being is made of. And in the center where a face might be are two brilliant white orbs that seem to be scribbled out there.
She snaps and all the threads in the room become visible. The tangle of Audra's threads swirling and Angelica's barbed, thorn-like thread wrapped around her with the darkness at her chest and the seed over her heart.
Again, you see her threads like a knit sweater in a briar patch, thickly bound and woven and tangled so beyond help. But then you see it. You notice that this isn't actually Audra's thread. This is the being that is possessing Audra. And that being makes her hold out her hand, and a wicked smile is smeared across her face as the head tilts, wide eyes constantly staring and never blinking.
And she takes Maeve's hand. I promise.
I promise.
Angelica's thorny thread wraps around their clasped hands, and the barbs sink in.
And you are bound by this promise.
That's my five raises all at once.
That's so fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. If there's anything that you guys want to ask afterwards, you can. If not, I will give you whatever raises you have left. For every two raises, I'll give you a hero point.
I will take the two hero points. God fucking damn.
Boarding the Song de Fu was interesting, to say the least, because while it was docked at a deep water dock, you did have to take a rowboat to get to it. It wasn't necessarily stationary in the water, almost as if the ship itself is a living creature. Jesse, you're a bit more used to this, having seen and been on La Rosa Blanca when Captain Ogwe took over. So you're used to that unnatural, jerky movement. Roland and Angelica, it's a bit odd. When you step onto these blackened, oil-slick planks, they have not a resistance, but it feels like stepping on moss. Like, it's kind of bouncy. And the moment that Mad Maeve boards it, she walks past the mast, doesn't come out the other side of the mast, but will come out on the other side of a railing on the forecastle.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's not unsettling at all, actually.
And she takes the helm, and immediately the sails drop. And they are like sheets of feathers that are tightly bound together. These black iridescent feathers. As soon as her hand touches the helm, the ship lurches and it begins to churn through the water and turn like a creature would.
And there's no other crew, right?
No other crew. It's just her. And all she has to do is just lift her hand and ropes move. As if people are there doing the jobs that they're supposed to be doing, but it's just her.
Where does Jesse go?
God, that is a very good question.
Nothing but great questions from Natalie tonight. I do my best.
I think initially he walks on board and then walks to the other side of the deck, to the railing, and just leans over, looking out into wherever they're going. It's just like, I hate this. I fucking hate this.
I hate it. I fucking hate it.
I think he'd be close to the bow, because I think he would go and hang out with Mama Coco on the bow of the Rose with her while she was fishing. So I think he would go over and stay as far away from Maeve as possible.
All the way on the other side of the ship.
So he goes to the bow.
Angelica kind of walks around. She will like run her hand against some of the feathered sails, just like taking in this creature in the shape of a ship.
Oh, they shudder when you touch them.
And eventually she joins you up the bow. I thought I might find you up here.
I'm not that hard to find. I don't go very far.
You're the same as me. The instant we set foot on this boat, you straightened a bit. You feel at home at sea, Jessina Kansa.
Yeah, I do. A bit different when it's living and not your ship.
Even a ship such as this can catch the wind and the waves. I wanted to ask you about this Wayland. Who he was to you?
That answer is complicated.
We have a ways to go.
I think it's complicated because I now have more questions than answers. And I'm more lost than I ever was. I'm unsure who to trust in all of this. I don't know how much of them was truthful. I don't know how much of our friendship was genuine. It felt right. It felt like what a friendship should be.
So then, do you think this is a rescue mission, the way Roland wishes?
I'm not sure just yet. I have a bit more thinking to do about it. I don't know whether I'm saving my best friend or inviting back that who has caused me so much pain.
She reaches into her, past like the scarf she's wearing, and pulls that locket out again and opens it, and her thumb shifts over to the portrait of the woman on the inside. Someone like this Wayland, like my Saya. They're dualities. They are two things at once. And in both cases, the other part has caused you pain. I don't mean to tell you which way to fall, but you should ask yourself, do you love your friend Wayland more than you hate this ghost, Samwell? Or is it the other way around?
She closes the locket and puts it back into her.
It's a choice only you can make. But I'll tell you this. It's easier on your soul to choose love over hate. I know. Because I've chosen both before.
I've spent so long where my only goal was to find Samwell and rip him from life. Everything I did, he was always in the back of my mind.
How often did the things you did in pursuit of that goal hurt the ones you actually cared about?
Every time.
That's what revenge does. You turn yourself into a weapon, but weapons hurt people.
My mother, she offered me a gift one of the last times I saw her. Her coat, one she used to wear when she paraded as the Wild Rose, and this sword, Bramble. She offered me a choice between them. And she said it herself, that she was afraid that I would follow directly in her footsteps. And I told her that I wouldn't. I chose what ended up being a path of bloodshed.
I am now trying to be someone that fixes things. But I still can be pretty sharp. It's something I'm working on.
It is kind of a silly question for you. How much do you believe in fate? I'm curious because not all the time do we invest ourselves in the path we find ourselves walking. And I didn't know if you, despite your work, believed in it.
I don't know that I need to believe. I know it exists. But that makes me want to change it all the more. At least enough that the course of my life is a little less sad. My mothers gave me a gift. They've helped me to stay alive. But they came at a cost. And I think when your mother offered you hers, she knew the cost that would come with them.
She made a deal with the devil, too.
That's been going around these days.
The reason why she's still around is because I gave up Samuel.
Are you worried if you take him back? You put her in jeopardy?
That's the last thing I want to think about, but I do have that fear, yes.
Angelica will step a little closer to Jesse, and she'll hold her hand out like she's asking for yours.
Which side is she on?
She's got both, so you can choose which hand you give her.
He pulls off his left glove and places his real hand down.
She sort of just cups it there for a second and like flips it over like she's reading your lines, that kind of thing.
Fate, destiny. I can't tell you what to believe in. But if your life is headed in a direction you don't like, you should change it. It's a good thing you met a fate witch.
And she'll, on the back of your hand, give you a little kiss.
When you do that, Jesse is looking at your hand. You have a similar scar in your thumb as I do. Interesting.
Angelica has her gloves, but I will say, on like anywhere there is exposed skin, you see a lot of scars. Thin, hairline scars, but scars nonetheless, just crisscrossing all over.
A record of my mistakes. And some victories.
You said I'm lucky. How does luck play into fate? Can it even?
Only when you take it for yourself.
I suppose so. What are you going to do when you find him?
I guess same as you, I had not considered the exact particulars. But I'm going to get him to pay back what he owes me. I still have people I need to save, Captain Akansa. So, like you, we'll see how many deals are struck today.
I think you and I could become friends.
When I first saw you, you did not strike me as someone who looked for friends.
Friends have been kind of a weird concept for me lately. You know, considering I was burned pretty hard by my best one.
Well, don't get your hopes up on me. You haven't seen how sharp I can get, Cuervo Nino.
Why do you keep calling me that?
She's already started to turn and walk away and just gestures at the black feathered sails and then back to you in your all black attire and gives you a little wink and we'll go stand over by the helm.
As soon as you start to walk up the steps to the forecastle, every once in a while, out of the corner of your eye, you'll see something sharp and black shoot out and hit an invisible barrier. Angelica, you're on the forecastle with Mad Maeve. One of them actually smacks onto the barrier and like slides down just enough for you to catch it. It's these crow-like creatures, but their beaks, instead of opening one way, they open three ways.
Oh, fuck.
They have double claws
that act as like a pair of hands and a pair of feet, and they're attempting to get through, and Mad Maeve looks over and says, because of our bargain, they can't get to us. Which is good, because they really love flesh.
Promises are promises.
You'll have to excuse me. I need to concentrate a little bit. If you have any questions, save them for after we're past the gate. And then she just kind of holds both of her hands on the helm and almost becomes transparent. You can kind of see through her as she's just focusing in on the ship. The camera pans all the way back and we can see the ship sailing on the sea. And in front of the ship, there is the horizon, but there's something odd about it. When the camera shifts just slightly, there's a refraction of light. And the second that the tip of the bowsprit hits that, it's like a ripple effect, and the horizon line vanishes. It's like moving water as you pass through it. The three of you get this wash of emotions, mostly adrenaline and anxiety, kind of mixed together as you pass through the realms. And that's mainly because you're human. Mad Maeve, as it passes over her, starts laughing as if someone is relentlessly tickling her. And as the camera zooms off of the deck and plummets down to the water and fast tracks, something big swims beneath waves as the lens passes over it. All of you realize that the sails are moving and stretching out like an actual pair of wings. The ship itself creaks and groans, and from the bowsprit comes this head of a crow. But there's several eyes on the side, and it begins to fly. It leaves the water, and it's so smooth. And you're sailing above a silver sea. In the sky with you are the stars, the moon, and the sun. And as the Song de Fu flies directly at the camera, we get lost in its black feathers.
Oh, that was fucking perfect. Jesus Christ. Holy, the timing of everything? The music?
That's so awesome.
Oh, mwah, I'm pretty beautiful. Good at this.
You're really good at this.
Really good at this, man. It's fucking wild.
Thanks.
Damn, dude, that was fucking spectacular.
God, so good.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll have to see what happens next time, won't we? Because now we're in the thick of it. You'll hear more about that in the Crow's Nest episode. Hopefully we'll see you there. And if not, we'll see you next time. Until then, remember to keep your friends close and your enemies even closer. And be safe and well.